The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. The role of genetic testing and counseling for the general internist is presented by Dr. Robert Hastie.
Excellent. So it's my pleasure to present genetics, which I think is just an incredibly important part of the boards. And of course, nowadays with the focus on genetics, it's a question, questions you're going to get a lot. And I'll start off by talking about some chromosomal abnormalities. So chromosomal abnormalities are things like Klinefelter syndrome and Turner syndrome and fragile X mental retardation. And I'm not quite sure why that's getting cut off. So they may give you a patient that's going to have early Alzheimer's disease, ALL, VSD, or AV canal defects. And of course, which genetic abnormalities is classically associated with? It's Turner syndrome. It's Down syndrome, Down syndrome, trisomy 21. And you will get a little bit increase of AML with Down syndrome, but ALL is 10 to 20 times more common in Down syndrome than is that it is in the general population. So the classic thing is they'll give you a Down syndrome, and they'll say which of the following malignancies is classically associated with this or whatever, if the patient's more likely to develop an ALL is the answer. And of course, Alzheimer's disease, if you have a patient with Down syndrome, by the time they reach 40, most of those folks actually have some Alzheimer's disease when they have Down syndrome. Another area that they made mention about in Alzheimer's disease, or I'm sorry, in Down syndrome, is AAI, or atlanto-axial instability. And so this is the challenge with some of these patients. They go for endotracheal intubation, anesthesiologist tips the back of their neck, all of a sudden they end up with cord compression. It could be a lethal challenge. Actually, I had one of these patients one time where, they forgot to screen, and of course the patient went for general anesthesia for some type of hernia repair, and the patient died consequences of that surgery. I talked to this anesthesiologist about a year or so ago, and he works in one of these big centers up in North Carolina. He says that probably like once every year they'll actually have somebody with AAI that people forget to screen. Of course, the other population is rheumatoid arthritis, right? So if they give you a patient with rheumatoid arthritis or Down syndrome, you probably should go ahead and do dynamic C-spine x-rays before. So, flexion, extension, C-spine x-rays. And if you see AAI, obviously the next step would be fiber optic intubation. You wouldn't want to do, regular endotracheal intubation in those folks. So, it's something that the anesthesiologist can do. And there are some technical reasons why they just don't, do a fiber optic intubation on all patients. There's a, some time issues, et cetera. So, definitely think about that. And the references out there show that it's pretty common in Down syndrome. If you look on UpToDate, it says it's only like 17% of Down syndrome, but it's like, if you look at, this reference I have here, it's like 80%, so it's pretty darn common. All right, so another one is the increased risk of germ cell tumors, infertility, small testes, and a tall or unicoid habitus, and this is the Klinefelter syndrome, the XXY. And so if they give you, Klinefelter syndrome, and they say, what's the patient most likely to develop, germ cell tumors, if that's in there, you should probably think about that. Of course, infertility, they have small testes on physical examination. Tall or unicoid habitus. I remember one time I was a resident, and I kind of memorized that buzzword when I was a medical student, unicoid. I had no idea what unicoid meant, right? So I kind of looked it up, and actually it's like devoid of sexual distinguishing characteristics. So it's like that guy introduces you as, or that person introduces you as Pat, and you can't tell if Pat is a girl or a boy, or if they're Chris, and is it a girl Chris or a boy Chris? That's unicoid. Neural mentation associated with coarctation and bicuspid aorta. This is Turner syndrome or XO. Yeah, these are the web necks, typically normal mentation. On the board, they'd probably say, okay, well, you know, which of the following valvular defects, or if they give you this patient with a, you know, murmur of the right sternal border, you know, you got to think, you know, could it be associated with Turner syndrome? I think that, you know, they'll probably give you the appearance of the patient. There was this one physician I used to know. You'd see her, you know, at conferences, you know, from time to time, and, you know, she had a classic web neck, and so, you know, that's one way to remember that you can always have, you know, you have normal mentation, right? I mean, you know, to have to become a physician, right? And the next one is normal. They look normal, or they may have this thin face and large jaw, and they typically have these very enlarged ears, and they have very large testes on physical exam. This is the fragile X mental retardation syndrome, and as the name implies, they typically have mental retardation too. So, you know, think about, you know, these big ears, big testes, you know, maybe a big jaw, but otherwise they relatively look normal, and they, you know, invariably have mental retardation. This is the fragile X mental retardation syndrome. All right, so let's talk a little bit about autosomal dominant, and we'll go through each of these conditions on the next slide. And just as you may recall, the autosomal dominant, if they're on one allele, you know, if they have one allele of the gene affected, there's a 50% chance the offspring will develop that condition, you know, stated. So they may ask you some type of question about, you know, chances of a child developing the condition or something like that, and it's 50% chance if it's on one allele. So here it is, mitral valve prolapse, ascending aortic dilatation, ectopic lens, fibrillin gene, and of course this is autosomal dominant condition. This is Marfan syndrome. They'll give you, like, you know, this is the Abe Lincoln, you know, that famous guy on Broadway a couple years ago that died from it. The mitral valve prolapse, ascending aortic dilatation, you know, the ectopic lens, you know, so they may give you a picture of the patient's, you know, lens, you know, out of place. Fibrillin gene is the mutation of Marfan syndrome. So collagen defect, hypermobility or fragile skin, also have mitral valve prolapse, arterial aneurysms, and they typically have organ ruptures. And so just the slightest trauma can set off organ ruptures, and this is, of course, is Ehlers-Danlos, you know, those kids that, you know, can bend their fingers back and stuff, and, you know, just minor trauma, you know, can actually, you know, cause, you know, organ ruptures in these folks and spontaneous bleeding, just because, you know, they don't have the, they have that collagen defect. All right, so another autosomal dominant condition is BRCA, and, you know, I'll tell you, that's one thing that we should probably, like, you know, have some type of consensus in our profession, because, you know, you talk to about a third of the people, they say BRCA, and some people say BRCA, and some people say, you know, BRCA, and I have no idea which is we should be saying, but of course these are autosomal dominant. Yeah, if you have this gene, it's about a 50 to 80% chance that you'll develop breast cancer in your life. And remember, if you're a male and you have BRCA2, very, very common for those folks to develop breast cancer, male breast cancer. So remember, breast cancer, like 99% women, 1% in male. Chances are, if you have this patient that has breast cancer, they very well may have BRCA. So think BRCA if you have male with breast cancer, specifically BRCA2 more than BRCA1. So here's another one, cytoskeleton defect, pigmented gallstones, hemolysis. Sometimes you can give a splenectomy and it might be helpful. So in some occasions, hematologist may recommend go ahead and do a splenectomy in these patients, but hereditary severe cytosis, again, another autosomal dominant condition, cytoskeleton defect, pigmented gallstones. So, you know, you have those, radio opaque gallstones. And of course, you know, you get, you know, pigmented gallstones when they have a cholecystectomy is what you'll get back from PATH. Here's another one, HTT gene mutation, CAG nucleotide repeat. You know, of course, this is another autosomal condition, Huntington's disease. You know, I'm like still patting myself in the back. I had about this homeless guy about 10 years ago came in, and of course they brought him in. He was like failing his arms and stuff like that, and he was like kind of a placement condition, and we, everybody was kind of scratching their head and, what's wrong with this guy? Because, he's, doing, all these strange repetitive motions and stuff. And the guy had no idea what's wrong with him. He was this chronically serial homeless guy, no family history. And, so I said, what the heck, we'll just order, for Huntington's disease. And then, it kind of comes back. If you ever see the report for Huntington's, it actually says, the CAG repeat. And actually it showed the, the CAG repeat on the chart, but that was a pretty cool case. So hereditary non-polyposis colon CA, autosomal dominant condition, 5% of colon cancer. Think Lynch's syndrome. So think about that. 1 out of 20 patients with colon cancer is Lynch's syndrome. So, probably something that, we don't think about as much as we should. Lynch's syndrome, 5% of colon CA, hereditary non-polyposis colon CA. All right, so let's talk a little bit about MEN or the MEN syndromes. These are autosomal dominant. So again, 50% chance that if it's carried on one allele, it will go down to one of the offspring, and if they're autosomal dominant, they'll express that phenotypically. So the ones I really want you to focus on, and I think the only questions they're probably gonna ask you is 1, 2, and 4, right? So 1, just think pity, para, pan. If you can remember, pituitary tumors, parathyroid tumors, and pancreatic tumors, that's 1. So pity, para, pan is how you remember that. Hyperparathyroidism is the most common of type 1 MEN. For type 2, just think medullary. So like, if you see like MEN in the question, and you see something about medullary, that's like one of those things you don't even have to think about. I mean, it takes like one neuron firing off. You just go, you don't even have to read the rest of the answer, right? You just, medullary type 2. And, type 4, I don't think they're gonna ask you, too much about, but it's very, very similar to type 1. So, pity, para, pan, hyperparathyroidism is the most common sign for type 1, medullary type 2. All right, so let's talk about some another one, autosomal dominant condition, polycystic kidney disease, PKD1 or 2 gene mutations. I think here, obviously everybody knows about polycystic kidney disease, and you probably get quite a bit about that in nephrology, but I think the intracranial aneurysms is one that people forget about with polycystic kidney disease. So if they give you this, the patient comes in with subarachnoid hemorrhage and maybe some type of chronic kidney disease or something like that. You got to think of polycystic kidney disease. And again, autosomal dominant. I had this guy a while back. He was like, hey, I got polycystic kidney disease. And no one had really ever talked to him about what's the chances. He had 2 daughters. And I said, well, chances are one of them probably has it. It's 50-50 chance. I mean, could be nobody has it. All right, so women are most commonly diagnosed with this condition because of menses. It's von Willebrand's disease. Remember, von Willebrand's disease is the most common bleeding disorder in America. It's diagnosed more in women just because of the menses. Sometimes, people just don't notice, the guy has all these nosebleeds and, bleeds a lot. It just like never comes up. Again, another autosomal dominant, most common bleeding disorder in America. Women more likely to be diagnosed. All right, so they give you this patient with a murmur, left sternal border, systolic ejection murmur. The murmur decreases with the hand grip, but when you ask the patient to bear down or do a Valsalva, the murmur gets, dramatically louder. Of course, it's hokum. Again, autosomal dominant, 50% chance to carry on the gene to the kids. That's hokum. All right, so this one is a triplet repeat. It's a myotonin protein kinase gene, a triplet repeat. Prolonged rhythmic discharges on an EEG. So if you do an EEG on these folks, you'll see these prolonged rhythmic discharges. I don't think for IM boards that they would actually show you the EEG, but it's a type of muscular dystrophy. And this is a classic internal medicine question because it typically presents to us, right? So it's second or third decade, autosomal dominant. This is myotonic dystrophy. It's a type of muscular dystrophy, second or third decade, so absolutely could present to us. So if you have somebody that presents with a muscular dystrophy type of thing, think about myotonic dystrophy in the second, third decade. EEG can pick up these rhythmic discharges, but you see this triplet repeat on the myotonin protein kinase gene. All right, so let's just talk about some of the autosomal recessive conditions, and I'll talk about cystic fibrosis and hemochromatosis and sickle cell and thalassemias. So remember, if you have an autosomal recessive gene, and so in this particular cartoon, you have the father who has the autosomal recessive, and you have the mother who has the autosomal recessive. For a child to actually have the condition, they have to have both alleles. So if you have both the mother that has on one allele and you have the father has on one allele, there's only a 1 in 4 chance that any of the kids will actually be phenotypic. You'll have one child that won't have any alleles and you'll have two children that'll be carriers. So kind of a throwback to your old genetics. All right, so this is one, they'll give you somebody with asthma, right? So to me, when I'm like approaching the boards, and they talk about somebody with asthma, I'm like, thinking, could it be alpha-1 antitrypsin, right? Because we're like Pavlovian trained that we're missing alpha-1 antitrypsin like on so many patients. And then if they give you basal or emphysema, boom, you don't even have to like read the rest of the question, right? This is gonna be alpha-1 antitrypsin. So they'll be, okay, if you see alpha-1 antitrypsin is the answer, basal or emphysema, something about asthma, you should just automatically go ahead and answer alpha-1. All right, so CF, cystic fibrosis, again, autosomal recessive. The CF patients, people forget that they actually have intussusception, fairly commonly, especially when they're young. So, you have a young person, abdominal pain, intussusception. I don't know they'll have that much on the IM boards, but probably what they'll get you on, because everybody knows Pseudomonas with cystic fibrosis, right? I mean, if you ask, the second year medical student, they'd probably get that. But the IM question on this is Burkholderia sapaciae. So it's like that kind of weird bug. If you see that bug, I mean, you should be looking for CF as the answer. So if you see Burkholderia sapaciae, think about CF. So classically associated with CF. And I don't think that you actually see that bug with hardly anything else. I don't know, it's just I guess the conditions are just perfect for that bug and it could be a tricky little bug to treat. All right, here's another one. So hook-like osteophytes in the second and third MCP joints. So you see this x-ray, and they may show you an x-ray, and the distal x-ray just has this part of the bone just looking like a hook at the end of the metacarpal phalangeal joint. Particularly in the second and third, it's gotta be hemochromatosis. So think about hemochromatosis and hook-like osteophytes, metacarpal phalangeal joints, transferrin, I think everybody's looking for transferrin stats nowadays as like the screening. I mean, the ferritin's gonna be, elevated. You have these typically very high ferritin levels. And then of course the confirmation is the HFE gene, 292CY or whatever. But that's autosomal recessive, hemochromatosis, hook-like osteophytes. Val substitution for glue, that's an autosomal recessive condition. Again, sickle cell with a val substitution for glute. All right, so these are the thals, right? They'll give you somebody with Mediterranean, descent, all this other crap, right? But classically, what they'll do is they'll give you this hemoglobin electrophoresis. The trick here, and people always forget that, thalassemias are named for the missing part. So if they give you this hemoglobin electrophoresis, and the alpha is gone. If you don't see any alpha, that's alpha thalassemia, right? If you don't see any beta, that's beta thalassemia. So it's kind of like that tricky little thing when you're interpreting these hemoglobin electrophoresis. All right, so mutations of the ATP7B gene, and this is gonna be Wilson's disease. And so, obviously they'll probably give you some of the Kaiser Flesher rings and typically low ceruloplasmin is, the first approach. But you can kind of confirm that with the ATP7B gene, one of those genes that, probably when you know, some of the folks in the room, you know, graduated from medical school. They probably hadn't discovered this gene, right? And so now it's just one of those tests that we can get, the ATP7B gene, autosomal recessive Wilson's disease. And of course, with Wilson's, you know, they may give you the the hepatic encephalopathy, schizophrenia-like, you know, thing. You know, my buddy Ryan Smith, he just diagnosed with one of these in a schizophrenic, or this patient with suspected schizophrenia up in Maine recently. All right, so X-linked recessive, G6PD, hemophilia A and B, those are the ones that are X-linked recessive, and that they'll probably give you. And remember, X-linked recessive, it's on the X. You know, the mother's, you know, and here in this example, the mother's unaffected, so the father has it. He'll carry that gene on to the daughter. And so it's really when one of those daughters has a male child, that male child, you know, can have that X-linked recessive gene. So, you know, that's the classic one, you know, where the patients, you know, they tell you, you know, it skips a generation. Or you know, when we're pimping medical students and, you know, they don't take, like, the grandfather or the grandparent history, you know, that's a classic, you know, question. Okay, well, why is it important to take a family history, including, you know, the grandparents? Well, the answer is because of X-linked recessive, you know, conditions. Okay, so this is a G6PD, shorter red blood cell lifespan. It occurs actually in about 10% of African-American males. Remember, it's X-linked recessive, so males. You know, you typically want to avoid the NSAIDs, aspirin, nitrofurantoin, quinine sulfa, antimalarials. And if you want to get too much into the weeds, you know, WHO has a classification. So there's like 1, 2, and 3. One's like really bad G6PD. You know, those people, you know, I mean, they can, you know, aspirin or NSAIDs kind of set it off. But if they're WHO 2 and 3, you know, the only thing that WHO 2 and 3, which are like the moderate and mild forms, I mean, they really have to watch out for the nitrofurantoin or the macrodantin or the, like, I guess the fava beans, which, I mean, I don't know. I don't think I've ever had a fava bean. But anyway, so that's it. Another one that's X-linked recessive, you know, are the hemophilias, the A and B. Remember, you know, it's 8 and 9 respectively, you know, are the factor deficiencies, typically diagnosed at a very young age. You know, I guess one of the things they might give you, like, the hemophilic arthropathy, so they give you this joint that just looks like, you know, everything's like all like the worst osteoarthritis you've ever seen in your life in like a 35-year-old. Well, that's from a hemophilia. So what happens is, you know, they hit their knee on something, bleeds into the joint, very painful, right? Blood hurts, and almost anywhere you put blood, it hurts, right? Gets in the joint, you know, basically breaks down the joint over time, hemophilic arthropathy. So they may just show you a really bad joint, you know, on the exam. Again, X-linked recessive for both A and B, 8 and 9 respectively are the factor deficiencies they may give you. So the last thing I was going to talk about is the mitochondrial mutations. And this is like the things like the Milos syndrome, myoclonic dystrophy, and I have it in there. You know, I saw Milos one time, and so this guy had the Milos syndrome, mitochondrial mutation. Remember, you get your mitochondrium, you know, from your mother and maternal inheritance, but the mitochondrial mutations, Milos, I think, is probably the most common of those that you might see. But, you know, these folks will have the very, very elevated lactic acidosis. And, you know, I remember, you know, you probably read the ICU book. You know, and the ICU book has this thing with lactic acid levels, like, really high. And, like, there's a certain level of lactic acid that, you know, chances are they're going to die during the hospitalization. And so, like, you know, I remember this Milos syndrome. He walked around all the time with, you know, lactic acid that's like 10 times the normal range, and he was fine. But I put that in your handout.